Hopefully most people are here now after the breakfast and the clean-up for the first talk of this Easter 2007 Rains Retreat. Not Rains Retreat, maybe it rains, but it's a 9-day retreat anyway. And whenever I do these retreats, I have a very clear aim and goal which makes the talks very focused. And I suppose that goal comes from my own experience the first time I did a 9-day retreat still as a student. Now, putting lots of time and effort into meditation, especially on the breath, that on one occasion I got into a very, very deep state of meditation. And of course that affected my future life quite remarkably. Just to be able to see what the mind can do and how much peace, bliss, and how much profundity you can get just by sitting down. And I suppose ever since that time you'd always like to share that experience of deep meditation with as many people as possible. And so certainly that one of the main aims of this retreat is trying to guide everyone here just to get closer and closer and closer to those deep states of meditation. And when the mind can literally be released from its body, and not released floating around in space, but going to its own space, its own little world, of just peace and stillness and profundity and joy. It's a marvellous experience, but it's not just for the experience of these states. I know that sometimes people say that I'm just teaching so-called samatha, which is what those states are supposed to be, is not really gaining the insights necessary for enlightenment. But the point is very clear that when you experience those states, that's the data which we use to gain enlightenment. That's the experience of stillness and peace and letting go, of freedom from things like will and body and senses, which gives the information which the mind will process to gain the right view, the new view, the different way of seeing things. So that experience of deep meditation is so powerful and so important. But that would always be the main aim of teaching these retreats. But however, that whenever you have such lofty goals, there's always many dangers, and those dangers are people trying too hard, making these huge aspirations and just driving themselves nuts trying to achieve it and getting very frustrated in the process. But fortunately that does not need to be an obstacle to this retreat, simply because the way to achieve those lofty states is no other than the same way that we relax, make peace with ourselves and with our body and with our environment. And just, as they say these days, to chill out. That is what we do here. So the way I'm teaching here is going to help you not just gain these deep states of meditation, but also to make you relaxed and at ease and peaceful. So even those who don't get those deep states of meditation, which will be the majority of you, you'll still gain this wonderful state of ease and peace, of being relaxed, and to be able to taste a little bit of what freedom truly means. As I mentioned in my talks and the books, it's important to know the two different types of freedom to be found in the world. And the two different types of freedom is just described by changing just one preposition. Instead of saying freedom of desires, where your desires can go and do whatever they want, and they can run freely in your mind, whatever you want, you can aspire towards, whatever you want, you can maybe get if you are skillful enough. I know that somebody just gave me a DVD last week. It's the latest thing going around called The Secret. And apparently I saw in the weekend newspapers that the book about The Secret is on the bestseller list in Australia. And The Secret. This is a secret which has been kept from you for 2,000 years, or even more than that. And it is knowing this secret which has empowered people to be famous and successful, to be rich beyond your wildest dreams. And now the secret is revealed. How to get what you want, basically. And it's a crazy thing, because the whole idea of that video was to get what you want, you just need to visualize it and keep it in your mind, and they have the law of attraction. whatever you really wish for, you keep in your mind and you have faith. First of all, you say, I think, visualize it, and then believe, and then step three, receive. It's crazy. There's one guy who was going around saying that, you know, whenever he was going into town, he would visualize the car parking spot exactly where he wanted it, you know, right next to the shop. Not in disabled bays, you can't spell it, but just right next to the disabled bays. He'd visualize it and believe in it. And sure enough, when he got to the shopping center, that bay was free. Or if there was someone there, they were just about to pull out. I'm afraid I'd rather believe sort of in the Tooth Fairy, Father Christmas, and aliens from outer space before that. But anyway, even if it did work, that's not the freedom which we aim for in life. Not the freedom to gain whatever we want. Because you'll find that that is endless. When you get one car parking space, then you want the, you know, the new job, the promotion. Then you want the beautiful girl or the beautiful boy. Then you want the money. Then you want the fame. Then you want immortality. There's no end to the desires which people want. And that's why actualizing desires is not freedom. Just one desire leads to the next. But the other type of freedom is what we call freedom from desire. When we don't need that car parking space. You can park anywhere in the shopping mall and enjoy the fact that the further away we get from the store, the more exercise we will have and the longer we will live as a result. We don't want the most beautiful partner in life, because if you marry the most beautiful partner, you'll be jealous for the rest of your marriage when other people look at her and other women covet your husband. You don't know what he's up to when you're here on a 9-day meditation retreat. So if you marry sort of someone who's, you know, just ordinary, you know that no one will covet them. So you could be quite safe to leave them alone while you go on retreat. And you don't want the big money, because gee, the big money is always a big problem. This average is always the best. And so this whole idea of like desires and thinking that that will create the happiness which you really want in life, that is a great delusion, a fantasy. That is a secret which the Buddha revealed 2,500 years ago. It's not that getting what you want is going to create you satisfaction. You know, one of my heroes when I was young, Mick Jagger, "I can't get no satisfaction," he kept on singing. And I still remember that song. I remember seeing him live when I was 11 years of age, sort of in London. And I never got any satisfaction because these stupid girls were screaming all the time and I couldn't hear anything which was being sung or played. All I heard was, I was really upset about that. Anyway, that even Mick Jagger, with all his millions, get whatever girl he wants, still can't get any satisfaction. But Buddhist monks, if I sang a song, I'd say, yeah, I can get satisfaction by sitting down and being still and being peaceful. In other words, subduing your desires, calming them down, making them peaceful. That is the secret. And that is the whole goal of this retreat. Settling your desires, calming them down. Because it's the desires, the wants, the cravings, that's what disturbs the peace. And really, monks should be justices of the peace. If anyone deserves to be a justice of the peace, it's a monk. Because we're just, and we know what peace is. You know, to keep the peace. And that keeping the peace is just like calming the desires, subduing. So when we actually go for these goals, be careful. Don't desire those goals. Don't say, yeah, 9-day retreat, this is my goal. I'm going to get jhana or bust. Last time I got really close, this time I'm going to get it. And don't try visualizing it and have the law of attraction. If I visualize this desire, because what you do if you visualize desires, it is a law of attraction, you get more desires coming up. That's what happens. So, letting go, making peace, calming the mind. And that whole idea, that mind state of calming, 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 is what you should always remember during this retreat. Whatever it is, just to make the body more calm. Just make the mouth calm. To make the mind calm. Settle things down. Soothe the body. Calm the mind. To create this beautiful, peaceful state. And when you understand what the goal actually is, the calming has to be done now. You don't put it off to the next moment. It's the peace is what you make in this moment right now. Which means that all these goals and desires of what you're going to do next, all your plans of how you're going to spend this retreat, it's just a lot of messing around. Don't plan anything. You're very fortunate in this retreat that, you know, there's a bell which tells you when to have breakfast, there's a bell which tells you when to have lunch, and that's all you need. Is it not a bell? I'm not talking about the ding-ding bell, I mean it's the bell in your stomach. It's what we call the body clock. And you'll know 7 o'clock. It's amazing that even actually people can't sort of wake up in time for the morning chanting or whatever, they always wake up for breakfast. Whenever we've been here, I don't know anyone who's ever slept in over breakfast. They slept in for the first sit in the morning chanting, anything, but not for breakfast. So you don't have to worry about this time business here. You've got 9 whole days of freedom from time. It's a beautiful thing to have. So when you aren't concerned and bothered and imprisoned by all these appointments which you have and what you've got to do next and how much you've got to finish in a certain time, it's amazing just how much desires get subdued. And how they just disappear. And how you do start to live in the moment rather than live for the next thing you have to do. So we come into this beautiful moment. In this moment, the more focused you are on now, the more that desires are starved. They don't have the freedom to grow in your mind. Because all wants, you have to have some idea of the next moment, the next hour, the next day, later on. So, which is one of the reasons why I always encourage the first few days to focus in this moment, just now. This is the only time you have. And just don't give a damn about the next moment, about tomorrow, what's happening after this retreat. Focus in this moment all the time, because that's the place where you do the work in meditation. And you create the future by caring for the now and making this present moment soft, gentle, kind and free by letting go. So that is your job, that's your work for this meditation retreat, just to care for this moment. At all moments you have to care for it, to nurture it. This moment is the only moment you've got. This is not a 9-day retreat, it's a 1-moment retreat. Think about it that way, and then already the calming starts to happen. So much of the busyness of our life, you know, what burdens our mind and takes up so much space. What we have to think about is our plans of what's going to happen next and what we have to do next and working out our future. You come on a retreat to get away from all of that. Now here you are, sort of homeless ones, for 9 days. You're like monks and nuns. You're actually taking your attention away from the world of time. Because that's really what makes this world go round, time. That's part of craving, part of attachment, part of the cause of suffering, sort of the tyranny of time. And now you've just come into this moment. And you learn how to dwell in this moment as much as you possibly can. So when you're out in the garden, you're not thinking of the meditation happening next. You just listen to the sound of the birds. You're just feeling the sun on your face in the early morning. Or the cool breeze or the wet grass under your feet. And you feel that as fully as you can. The first aim, if you like, of meditation is not to get anywhere, but to be ever more fully where you are. To deepen the experience of now, rather than try to get somewhere else. To fulfill the now experience as much as you can, as often as you can. And when you start understanding this, not only is this like a gateway into the very, very blissful, deep, profound meditations, but it's also what creates a calm and peace in this retreat. So you really do start to relax and enjoy this retreat. These retreats, if they get hard, then it means you're missing the point. If it gets soft and easy and comfortable and joyful, then you are on the path. Every 2 years in Bodhinyana Monastery, during the Range Retreat, I read out the basic course on Buddhism written by Venerable Jnana Tiloka many years ago called The Word of the Buddha. And they got some beautiful quotes, you know, from the suttas, from the mouth of the Buddha. And one of the quotes, which I always pause to emphasize when I give out these readings during the Range Retreat to the monks and the novices and Anagarikas, is that the Buddha said, "This is a path without groaning." And that's what he said. Now the Buddhist path, the Eightfold Path, there's no groans on this path. It's just a beautiful quote from the word of the Master himself, the Buddha. Now if you really understand what this path of meditation, this path towards enlightenment is, there should be no groans and gritting your teeth. If you're gritting your teeth, you're missing the point. You should go and see a dentist or something, or take your teeth out, or just don't grit them, for goodness sake. Keep it peaceful and easy, because you're caring for this moment. And caring for this moment means putting mindfulness, that's being careful, and caring. In other words, having kindness towards this moment. Both have to go together. Careful and caring. In this moment. When you start to do this caring and careful to a moment, you will actually find that the mind does start to relax and get still. And the relaxed and still mind is an emotional state of joy and peace. Another point with this meditation retreat. Here you are working not with thoughts, but with emotions. So this is not an intellectual path. It is very much a feely-feely path. To get into meditation, the more you start thinking about it, and analysing it, and having conversations about it, just the more you're missing the point, and the more you're distracting yourself. You actually feel what peace is. I know, like a philosopher, can actually write a whole book about peace, but never know what it truly is. But here, in this meditation retreat, you can just simply calm your mind and you can feel peace as an emotional state, a very joyful state. So throughout the meditation, when you get into the present moment, don't try and work out what it means with words. Feel it. Feel it emotionally, in your heart, in your guts, whatever. That's except for those people who've got irritable bowel syndrome. Don't feel anything in your guts, please. But feel it exactly how it is to you, as an emotion, as a feeling. Because that will give you another key to success in meditation. Now, as we start to get into this moment, we start to soften the desires and then eventually subdue them and then abandon them. It feels good. The freedom from desire is an emotional high. And once you start to taste that freedom, what the Buddha called the taste of freedom, even though the Pali word, vimutti rasa, you know, the taste of it, it didn't mean it's in your mouth, you know, like the taste of the muesli this morning. This is actually the emotional synonym, or metaphor rather, of feeling, you know, what it's like to be peaceful. And that is an important part of meditation to focus on, to make much of, until it's very, very clear to you that you're not just watching the breath or watching the present moment, you're feeling it. And you're feeling the emotional high of being in the present moment. You're feeling the emotional joy of being silent. And the vibrant energy of stillness and power. Whatever words you try and describe, you know, these sometimes indescribable emotions. And you're also experiencing just the, you know, the bliss of the peace, you know, of just being with the breath and nothing else to think about and going on in the world. It's important you recognize those emotional highs in each of these stages of meditation. Because that gives you the glue so you can sustain your attention there. In fact, you don't sustain the attention. The attention is sustained there because it's fun, it grabs your mind, because it is an emotional high. So recognize the joy, the peace, the emotional satisfaction of every stage of these meditations. Because when you do that, and Buddha gave this very beautiful description, when he said that when you start recognizing these happiness, these highs, these freedoms, these emotional summits in meditation, that the mind literally leaps towards it. You don't need to go and force the mind to meditate. The mind wants to go and meditate. Similar to if any of you have a dog in your house and it's time for walkies. As soon as you grab hold of the leash or it's the right time, you don't have to put the leash on the dog and drag it out of the house. The dog wants to go for walks. It starts yapping and wagging its tail ferociously. It just can't wait to get out the door and explore. At least those are the dogs I used to know. I don't know about the dogs in Australia these days. Are they couch potato dogs these days? Has anyone got a dog you have to drag out to get it out the door? But because it wants, it likes and enjoys these things. And that's exactly the same when a person recognizes the emotional satisfaction of every stage of meditation, increasing highs of emotional fulfillment. Literally. Sometimes when I start meditating, if I had a tail, it would be wagging. If you attach a tail to my bottom, you see it. Meditation retreat, it would be wagging ferociously. Can't wait to get on the seat. You can't wait to get into the meditations, because I recognize them as a great source of happiness and joy. Now that is an important thing to develop on this retreat. Because that will actually get you further inwards. You are no longer forcing the mind to meditate. The mind, having recognized the freedoms from desires, wants to meditate. It can't wait. You sit down there, great, here we go. You just go in. Because after the mind leaps onto these meditation highs, it's after leaping onto it, you get joy there. Yeah! I mean meditation. And then from the joy, it's not only the joy, like the, it is actually satisfaction is a very good word for this word, pasidati. Confidence, joy, happiness, you're just having a great time there. And then because you're having a great time there, you settle in there. You don't want to go anywhere else because you're having fun. And that's also an important part of this meditation. When you really get into it, You don't want to go anywhere, you don't want to get out of the meditation. Even thoughts can't come into your mind because they're disturbing you. Shut up, thoughts. I'm having a good time. It's the same way if somebody is watching a movie and your partner comes up and said, telephone call. Hang up. Throw the telephone in the toilet and flush it. Whatever, because you don't want to be disturbed when you're having a good time. And this is where you settle into the meditation. You settle in there long enough. And all these distractions from outside, because they can't come in, it's like they're knocking at your door and you're not answering because you're settled into whatever you're doing inside the mind. After a while, those people stop calling, they stop knocking on the door, they go away. At last, you are free. You are free from those desires. You've settled them down. They've gone. And you get to times in this retreat where you are walking outside or you're sitting or you're just having your lunch. You think, there's nowhere else in the whole world I'd rather be. And just here, in this moment. And that's what's called bliss. You're so happy where you are. You don't need anything more. You don't need sex, you don't need a partner, you don't need wealth, you don't need entertainment. Completely self-contained in this moment with peace and happiness. Simply because you've subdued and softened desires. You've got none left. So there's nothing pulling you away from where you are. You're free. Now this is giving you a taste of what this goal is all about. And of course, because it goes in the opposite direction of what most people are used to. In your life, you're all reasonably successful. If you weren't successful, you wouldn't have been able to afford the fee to come in here. I'm sorry you have to pay, but we hire this place. Who knows, next year when we have our retreat centre, it will literally be free. And any Tom, Dick or Harriet can be able to come in here. But you're already reasonably successful in life. And how did you become successful in life? Because you worked hard, you strived and you made it, you got something. And that becomes the habit which people have. And they come to meditation retreat and they use the same strategies which have worked so far in your life. The same strategies which got you the good marks at school, which got you to university, went there, or made you successful in your job, got you your partner, your house, your car, whatever. Many of you have been successful by using the strategy of making a desire and working like anything to try and get it and keep it. But meditation is the opposite way, which is why one of the key stories in the Buddha's enlightenment drama was when he put his bowl in the river Niranjara and made a determination that if I'm going to get enlightened, may my bowl travel against the current of the stream. And it did. And it's not just an omen that his enlightenment was going to happen. It was also an indication of how it was to happen. To go against the stream of craving. So the craving stream is, I want to get somewhere, I'm going to go and get it. Going against the stream is, no, I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm going to resist that stream instead of going on to the object of my desire. I'm going to go in to the source of that desire. Go in the opposite way. Go into the moment, into silence, into the body, into the mind. Go against the stream of craving, which is what I mean by subduing and settling desire, calming it all down until you're sitting here and you want nothing at all. No desire. From my 5th to 6th range retreat, or maybe 7th or 8th, I used to do that as probably my main meditation. Sometimes I used to do some breath meditation. A lot of times I did a little mantra, just no desire, no desire, no desire. Kept on repeating that to myself to remind me, no desire, no desire. And then that year when you were allowed to leave your monastery and just go travelling, it was a year of no desire. And this, we called it Tudong in Thailand, and Sri Lanka, they call it charaka, means literally wandering, where a monk takes all their possessions, just a bowl and robe and a few other things, a water bottle, a mosquito net, and you just walk. You've got no goal where you're trying to reach that day. You're not going to say, I've got to do 20 kilometers today, you know, next day I've got to do 25. There's none of this sort of goal thing. It's literally no goal at all. You just go walking. You come to a crossroad. And you're completely free to go left, to go right, to go straight ahead, or just turn around and come back to where you came from. And there's nothing waiting for you in either direction. So you're not going anywhere. You're just being. That was a way of letting go of desires. When you had no place you had to be, no time when you had to be there, and whichever way you went, there was a monastery to the east, there was a monastery to the north, there was a monastery to the south, there was a monastery where you just came from. There's always a place you can rest at night, and if you didn't actually rest in the temple, you could always rest under a tree. You didn't have to worry about your food, whichever village there was, and there was heaps of villages around, you can always take your bowl and just somebody will fill it, at least with rice, if nothing else. You imagine that freedom there, where you have no place to go, no sort of ties, absolute freedom of desire, because you had nothing to do, nothing to get, nowhere to go. It was a physical expression of freedom, and probably the freest I've felt physically for a long time. And well, I was also trying to replicate that in my mind, just the way I came to any crossroads, real crossroads, you know, where there's four roads, I can go whichever direction. Same when I came into this moment. I had no place I needed to go. I could go this way, that way, anyway, and it was all the same. No desires, no place to get to, nothing to achieve. Freedom at last from this crazy tyranny of desire. Now, in the meditation retreat, you're going to come to crossroads. Don't make decisions which way you go. Say, oh, I'll go left now, I'm going to go right, I'm going to go straight in. No, who cares? So you don't worry at all about where you're going. You're only concerned of where you are. The path is to let the future just evolve by itself. And let the path just come to you rather than you following the path. All you need to do is just to be here. Be here as much and as fully as you possibly can. And don't try and go anywhere. That's what I meant by no desire. Because desire is always what takes you away from where you are. No wonder you are restless. How can you rest when things are always pulling you away from where you are? So when you subdue that desire, you get so full of rest. Because nothing else to do. Nothing is pulling you, nothing is pushing you. You're just hanging out in this moment. And that's all you need to do to get the peace and happiness. Aiming for peace means you're always sacrificing peace. Making a goal of freedom is what imprisons you. You have freedom, you have peace, so don't throw it away because of desires and wanting and trying to get something or trying to go somewhere. So if one follows that more and more, and during these talks in the morning, I'm going to brainwash you something wicked on this retreat. But brainwash you just in the mornings, brainwash you in the evenings during the question time, and give you personal indoctrination sessions during the interviews. And to such point that your poor old desires, hopefully, will be beaten up and you just give in and just relax and enjoy yourself. But the thing is, when I brainwash people, it's not to control you. It's actually to stop all this control business, to give you freedom, to encourage you to go against the stream of your habits and to be free at last, to be where you are and realize just how beautiful and how peaceful and how delicious and how lovely that always was. And the great thing with this is the longer you stay where you are, the more it brightens up and becomes even more peaceful and more beautiful and more delightful. It's in this moment that you find the deep meditations. I've sometimes said that you have jhana right now. It's wrapped in all of these coverings. Just like some of the gifts which you can get from the shops, especially at Christmas. There are so many wrappings around them. It takes a long time, taking out the wrapping of the shop, and then the wrapping of the plastic, and then the wrapping of the manufacturer, and then the wrapping of the person who put the article in the box in the first place. There's so many wrappings, you know, in products these days. That's like so many wrappings around the peace which is in the middle of your mind. You can't see it anymore. But all one needs to do to gain the deepest of meditations is unwrap the mind. It's already there, we just need to take things away. It's what we call it, renouncing, letting go, peeling off all these desires and stuff which covers up the natural state of deep, blissful peace inside the mind. That's what we do. We take off the wrapping of time. We take off the wrapping of this thought, naming and discussing. We take off the wrapping of these five senses in the body. And then we get to the mind. And then we take off the wrapping of will, of doing things. Just calm these things down and it peels off. We go deeper into things. So saying this, this is what is here right now. Nibbana is covered with jhanas. Jhanas is covered with thinking, with will, it's covered with the senses, it's covered with this time and naming. And all we need to do is just unwrap things. And the only way it unwraps, it reveals itself, is when you stay in this moment long enough for all these things to fall off. So your job is to not to move, to stop, to be still, to somehow subdue those desires. So your aim is to be more fully where you are in every moment. That's why I say the stages of meditation. These aren't stages which you aspire to. It's not like a road map and say, I've got to get here, then I've got to get there, and how much time have I got? Yeah, we'll have to get to this stage by, you know, this evening because we want to get lunch here, and we've got to get sort of tea over there. It's not like going on a journey when you go on a holiday somewhere. These are just signposts which help you know how still you are. The more you don't move in the mind, the more these stages manifest. Stages of present moment awareness. Silence. Awareness of the breath. The full awareness of the breath. Awareness of the beautiful breath. The breath disappearing. And the nimitta, the light appearing. The nimitta, the beautiful light just stabilizing. Going into that light, into the first jhana. Getting to this second jhana, which is incredibly still, nothing moves. Going into the third jhana, where the bliss turns into something you never experienced before. And going into the great absolute peace of the fourth jhana. And even going further, till everything stops. These are just signposts, which you'll come across naturally. If you aspire to these things, if you want them to happen, you're putting this huge obstacle. You're destroying peace every time you make an aspiration to be somewhere other than you are. So these are stages in the meditation. It's good to know those stages. I've also been teaching the levels, or the stages, yeah, there's three levels at each stage, or the three stages of each level. Who cares anyway, which mess it up. And every stage of meditation you've got the level of recognizing, and then familiarity, and then ease and comfort. And to understand what I mean by each stage, has different levels. Many of you have come to this retreat center for the first time. Last night you may not have slept well. Even if you had a beautiful, comfortable bed and it was silent, the first night in a new place is always the body tenses up because you're not used to the place. Tonight you'll sleep much better. And after the third night it's like sleeping at home. You're used to the place, you're comfortable, the body knows exactly where it is and it feels safe. Like going to a new job, you don't know who the people are, exactly what you're supposed to do, you tense up. Or like becoming a new monk, you know, you're not quite sure what you're supposed to do, you'd always be tense. And after a while, you know, you get relaxed and sloppy like me. Being relaxed, you know what's going on. Now that type of, you know, first of all, you know, you recognize where you are. So you know what each of these stages are, you've had experience, you know what present moment is. And you know it well enough, you become familiar there. Ah, yeah, here we are again. Like all of those people here have been in this place many, many times. Now, even though we're actually in a new room this time, we used to be in the other room, but still it's familiar territory. You know all the toilets are, you know how things work, you know what to expect for lunch. So this is familiar territory. And when you're familiar, there's a certain sense of comfort there and ease. And that's what happens with, you know, these meditation states. The present moment, you recognize it so much, you're so familiar with it, you've been there so many times. It's like sitting in your favorite cafe, you know, with, you know, your special cup of latte or whatever you like. You know, it's, you know, your favorite cafe. You've been there many times, that's why you go there, because that's a coffee you really like. You recognize it, familiar, ah, you relax, ah, this is really good. Sitting there just enjoying this moment. That's what happens with every stage of meditation. The present moment, now, you recognize this. I have to keep mentioning this because we move so much into the past and future, into thinking and planning and remembering in our ordinary daily lives, that a lot of modern people, they don't know what the present moment actually is. They don't know it. They can't even recognize it when it's there because it's so unfamiliar, so weird and strange. So you have to keep on pressing on people. It's, you know, when all the past is gone, the future is not here, what's left? No, when you're not thinking about a minute ago or even 10 seconds ago or 1 second ago or anything earlier, and your mind is not projecting on what's going to happen next or tomorrow or when you leave this retreat or whatever, you're right here. And that here-ness, that now-ness, that presence, that's what we mean by the present moment. And after a while you recognize that so much, you actually relax in it, you're familiar. You know, it's because people aren't familiar, they can't stay in the present moment. Because it's not really settled there. Sometimes a bit afraid there, because it's unfamiliar territory. The more times you get into the present moment, the more times you recognize, you know exactly what we mean. You recognize that, you're familiar with it, then the sign that you are at ease with the present moment is it sustains itself. You just don't go off into the future or the past, because you can relax in the moment. Another simile is when I was a kid and I got my first bicycle, and you know, I was so afraid of falling off my bike. You know, I'd hold on to those handlebars until my knuckles went white, and I was so stiff because of fear, I kept on falling off. Because to balance on a bicycle, you know, you've got to move with the bike. And if you're really stiff, you know, you're going to unbalance and you're going to fall off. The more relaxed you are, the more supple your body, the less chance there is of falling off the bike. The same present moment, the more stiff you are, the more chance there is of you falling off and getting into the future and the past. You're not enjoying this moment. You're not settled there. You're not having fun in the moment. So when you actually really get into this moment, you're settled in there, you're familiar with it, you can relax there. If you're really relaxed, that means that you can stay there a long time. If you can't stay there a long time, it means you're not relaxed. You're not at ease with the mind. It's the same with this silence business. Now that is really amazing when you understand what inner silence is. And you can stay there. For those of you who go to the Armadale group, every week I have to keep repeating the same instructions, which is this. You've got to listen not just to what I say, but also to what's going on inside your mind as I say this. Because as I'm speaking, you will notice many spaces between my words. In those gaps between my words, what was happening in your mind? You were silent. You were waiting for me to speak, and you never knew what I was going to speak next. That's why you had to wait in silence. It's a beautiful little exercise for people who had never understood silence before to recognize it. There it was again. You're waiting, alert, with nothing going on. That's the silence. When you can recognize this, after a while you become so familiar with it, it's so delightful. You're free of this terrible thing inside of you, always telling you what to do. Once you can recognize that silence and you're familiar with it, you can hang out there for as long as you like. Just like that, only for hours. Isn't that beautiful? That's what we mean by the silent mind. Most people when they're meditating, they're just tough to maintain that silence for too long, because they don't recognize it enough. They disturb it. So that's why that very often, and this is good advice for you, when you're meditating, present moment awareness and silence, but don't ask for perfect silence. Maybe later on you can do perfect silence for an hour. You don't even need to watch the breath. In fact, if you just hold that silence for long enough with your eyes closed, nimittas will come up by themselves and jhanas will happen, because the mind is so poised and magical. But if that doesn't happen, just get a hold of the breath. Recognize what we mean by the watching the breath, the feeling of the breath. That which tells you whether you're breathing in or breathing out. You've all done some breath meditation before, but whenever I teach meditation for the first time to people, all I do is tell people to close their eyes, breathe in and out three times, and open their eyes after the third breath. And they'll go ahead and do that very easily. But then I say, how did you know? You were breathing in the first time, breathing out the first time, breathing in the second time, breathing out the second time, breathing in the third time, and now finishing the third out breath. How did you know that? And they sort of look inside themselves. There was some feeling and sensation. They try and describe it to me, but I said, no, you don't need to describe it to me. You need to know it for yourself. Whatever that feeling is. Because that's the feeling of the breath. That which tells you you're breathing in, right now. That sensation which tells you that in-breath has ended. The sensation which tells you the out-breath is now happening. Feeling, sensation, whatever it is, whatever tells you what the breath is doing, that is what we watch when we do breath meditation. when you recognize that feeling, when you become familiar with it, oh, it's such a wonderful resource for your life. Any time of the day or night, wherever you are, you can turn to that breath as a focus of your attention. Feeling of the breath. Because it only occurs in this present moment, because it is so simple, you can't say too much about it. I remember when I was doing some teaching practice, you know, when you're a trainee school teacher, you're almost like apprentice to another teacher, you take his class a couple of times. He had this way of punishing his students whenever they did something naughty. He would give them these essays to write on these ridiculous subjects. They had to write a 2-page essay on the inside of a ping pong ball. Was one of his favourites. And the punishment was, what can you say about an inside of a ping pong ball? There's nothing happening there. So the bit of a joke, but I always remember that because it was innovative. And I also use that as a simile, like the breath. What can you write an essay about an in-breath? Where it began? It ended? What else had happened? Nothing much. That's the reason why we watch the breath, because there's nothing much to say about it. It's a simple object which is available for the mind to know without complicating anything. So, present moment medicine silence and get onto the breath. And the breath by itself will help to make the present moment stronger and make the silence more stable. Just watching the breath. At least you've got something to anchor the mind on, something to do. So by getting deeper into this moment, you can actually, present moment awareness, come into this moment where you're sitting, not going anywhere, no time, no plans. Recognize this moment, get a bit of silence coming up, you know the silence like to send. And watch the breath. Get into it. Just this breath happening in this one moment. With the breath, when you first watch the breath, even I've been doing this breath meditation, I don't know how many years now. 37 years. Yeah, 37 years doing breath meditation. When I start watching the breath, always when I start watching the breath gets disturbed. It's not the natural breath. Because whatever you watch, you tend to interfere with. Don't worry about that. Just relax. After a few seconds or a few minutes, the breath will settle down. Because whatever you watch, you tend to interfere with. But after a while, the breath returns to being a natural breath. Once the breath is a natural breath, that's when it gets really delightful. So hang out with the breath long enough. Become familiar with it so you can just relax with the breath as your object. In the moment, silent, nothing to say, just being with the breath. At this point I will note that in the first couple of days when you do this, you're liable to fall asleep. If you do, don't worry about that. That's par for the course. It's those people who don't fall asleep when they're meditating are the ones I'm worried about. Because they are the control freaks, the ones who aren't even still enough to go to sleep. At least if you're going to sleep, and you've got some degree of calm. It's just you haven't got enough mindfulness to fully enjoy it when it happens. The mindfulness will increase later on. So don't be afraid of sleepiness and dullness in this meditation. That's almost like an expected part of the journey. And it doesn't last for that long as you just make peace with it and let it happen. And don't go struggling, or don't making a big problem out of it. Don't get proud and say, oh, I've been meditating for so many years and I'm sleepy again. And someone's got a camera in here, they're going to take a camera of me, a picture of me, with my head right down, almost touching the ground. We used to have these great games to entertain us. You know, being a monk, you didn't have much entertainment when you were a young monk. But every now and again, we used to go to these big ceremonies. And they were always all night. You used to get monks giving talks throughout the night in Thailand. And you had lots of monks visiting and lots of novices as well. And we'd always sort of wait maybe 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, just something to keep us awake, because the sermons were always really boring. And you'd look at the end of the line, because the little novices, you know, these like 8, 9, even sometimes 7-year-old novices at the end of the line. And you'd start watching them, and they'd always start, you know, swaying when they start falling asleep. And, you know, they'd always start swaying more and more and more. You'd be sitting up on little platforms, maybe about, you know, 1.5 feet, sometimes 2 feet above the ground. And not very wide either, because you knew that if they wobble too much, they'd fall over. And it was like waiting for them. They're getting closer and closer. You'd nudge, he's going to go soon. Now wake, have a look. And it wasn't just the monks playing about. All the lay people were doing it. They weren't listening to the monk giving the talk. They're looking at the novice and probably taking bets on who would fall over first. And of course, it would always happen. That'd be the mode of excitement. And the little novice would just sway a little bit too much, completely fall over. And because the robes which we were, he completely exposed his private parts. And everyone would laugh uproariously. And that was our entertainment. We were sadists, I suppose, I don't know. So much for compassionate monks. But that was nature, because only little novices, what do you expect? They weren't meant genetically to stay up that late at night. So anyway, don't worry if people start sort of falling asleep. You just go through that at the beginning of a retreat and it just disappears by itself. So don't get upset and don't ruin the peace by struggling and striving and making a problem out of this, feeling proud, feeling disappointed. It's all part of just calming the mind down. The mind gets calm and the energies start building up little by little. And then when you get through that sleepiness, oh, your mind is just so wonderful. Peaceful, poised, beautiful, having a great time. And that's when not only you're really relaxed, but you're having such a high, wonderful, beautiful time of it. And that's really, you know, the gift I want to give to you. You've all fed me for so many years, looked after my monastery, cared. And that's the gift of Dhamma, to give back to you. Not all these theories, you can read them in books. But the experience of the deep, peaceful, blissful states of mind. And what that does for the way you look at the world as well. Or simply because you spend more time in this moment, being more fully here, calming the mind and listening. To the silence between things, focusing on the breath, till the breath just goes so softly, so smoothly. And noticing the emotional joy of peace, the freedom from desires. When you're just so satisfied, so at ease just being here, you want nothing else in the whole world. So that's the talk for this morning, being at peace.
So it's easy, isn't it? Okay, now I've told you how to do it, just off you go.
So be patient and work. Any comments or questions about what I've just been saying? Yeah, go on.
Where I find it difficult is that you need a desire to actually be on to want to enlightenment, progress, whatever. But then is that if you have too much desire, you want to, you know, it stops you because it's obstacle. It's trying to strike that balance between being here and not outside, but not that much that it prevents you from getting anywhere. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you're saying about, so you need some desire to do things, but then you're supposed to have no desire. How do you balance that? And if monks here will confirm this, I often tell them that the monk's desire stops when they're sitting on their cushion. So their desire is actually to get here sitting down. Once they're here, stop. So your desire is actually to get on this retreat. You've done that, you're here, now you can stop. You don't need to do any more for the next 9 days. You're here. So now stop.
powerful. It takes a lot of guts and courage to stop this, because if I don't design things, it's all going to go wrong. I'm just going to waste time. You only waste time when you cultivate desires. I want this, I've got to get that, I shouldn't do this, I must get up earlier, I must eat less, I mustn't talk, I mustn't this. And there's all these desires and stuff. But the desire, always remember, the desire takes you away to somewhere else. It's only when you stop the desires you stay where you are. And that's where enlightenment is. That's where the jhanas are, where you are, not somewhere else. Every person has said that. So play around, have fun, explore, do weird and strange things. Sit here and say, no desire, 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 no desire. See what happens. Okay, we've got 11 o'clock. Your tummy will tell you when lunch is. You actually smell it, you'll feel it, you'll get the sensitivity of other people going in there. So you know when 11 o'clock is. You don't need to meditate. If you feel tired, you can go and take a rest. You can do walking meditation. You can go and sit under a tree. You can stand and watch the trees grow. You just do something completely stupid and ridiculous. Doing nothing. Just watch the birds fly through the trees. See what animals you can find crawling in the grass. Whatever it is, just be like a little kid. Be irresponsible, immature, simple, peaceful, in the moment. Give yourself some little enjoyment the first couple of days. If you really want to meditate, fine, you can meditate in here, as long as it's fun, because you want to be here. And then you have your lunch, and then after lunch you want to rest or have a walk around the garden. But keep silent, because don't disturb other people's space of silence. In the afternoon, we do some more meditation. You can go and take a rest. You can meditate in your room if you want to meditate in your room. You don't have to meditate in here. You meditate under a tree. One of the great things with retreats is there's so much space, so many places you can go and sit meditation. You can go and sit meditation in the toilet if you want to. Sometimes I've tried that before. Just when I was going to get into jhana, someone goes and flushes the chain next door. And just have some fun. And again, there's no interviews today. The interviews will start tomorrow. So this is just settling in time. Enjoying. Trying to soften the desires until you can just lessen the desires. A day of no desires. Nothing to do. Nowhere to go. Nothing to get. Just to be. That's a great preparation for meditation. And this evening, what time is it? 7:50. 7:50 we do the chanting. At 8 o'clock we have the questions and answers. So if a thought does come in your mind of a question, write it down on a piece of paper. Just outside between the kitchen and the dormitories. Write it down on a piece of paper, put it in the basket, and then we'll answer them this evening. And even if it's a question you know the answer for, but you think, that it's great if we ask this question so other people can also benefit from the answer, then put it down on a piece of paper. But remember, only one question per person. No more than that. From 8 to 9, we'll do the question time. So off you go, and enjoy having nothing to do.